Good morning. This is Jan Kane, and I'll be reading to you today from the Bloomington Pantograph, dated Friday, April 12th. We'll start with a headline, which is titled, HCC Students on Road to Filling Truck Driver Gap. Class preps drivers for license test with 120 hours behind the wheel. The byline is Lenore Sabota. A school bus driver, an art teacher, a college student. The three women from different backgrounds have the same goal, to get their Class A commercial driver's license and drive big rigs. They are enrolled in a 160-hour truck driver training course at Heartland Community College, preparing them to take the state's license test. I love to drive, I love to travel, said Holly Hayes of Bloomington, a driver for Illinois Central School Bus Company. I love the kids at District 87, too. I would stay if it paid more. Pay is a big attraction to landing a job as an over-the-road long-haul trucker. Caleb Gee, recruiting manager at Nussbaum Transportation of Hudson, said, I don't know of any other industry where, for a $1,000 investment in a course, you can be making $45,000 in your first year. By the end of the second year, that can rise to $65,000, he added. But being an over-the-road truck driver is not for everybody. It's a lifestyle change. It's not just a career change, said Gee. That lifestyle includes long hours in the cab of a truck, days away from home, and eating at restaurants or cooking food at your truck. The American Trucking Association estimates there is a shortage of about 500,000 drivers for long-haul trucking. About 6.2% of truck drivers are women. Among barriers to attracting new drivers, besides time away from home, are CDL requirements, strict drug and alcohol testing, and clean driving records, according to the ATA. Anytime you're on the road, there can be unforeseen problems, breakdowns, weather, traffic, said Hayes, a student in the Heartland class whose family runs a trucking business. That can mean delays in celebrating holidays or birthdays, she noted. Be prepared to celebrate when the whole family gets home, said Hayes. Another student, Dawn Grief of Chenoa, is an art teacher, but her fiancé is an over-the-road driver, and their plans are to drive as a team once she gets her CDL. She said the class is providing good preparation. I never backed up a trailer in my life before the class. I never pulled a trailer in my life, said Grief. Seven Headley of Fairbury is graduating in May from Illinois Wesleyan University with a degree in accounting, but she is getting her CDL to help her family. My parents own a carnival and need people to help drive the rides between events, she explained. Debbie Hale of Pontiac completed the Heartland course in August and has been working for Nussbaum since October. The former school bus driver and nurse's aide said, I personally like the freedom. I like being outside. She said the Heartland course does a good job of preparing students to pass the state's CDL exam, but the learning doesn't end there. After being on the road almost 6 months, you're still learning, she said. Nussbaum provides additional training during a 6-month probation period, said Gee. That training includes not just the work part, but also things like how to stay safe while sleeping at a truck stop and how to address fitness and healthy eating, he said. The Heartland course includes 40 hours of classroom instruction and 120 hours behind the wheel. 48 students have been involved in the program this academic year. There's a lot of information in a short period of time, said Devin Davis, who has been teaching the course at Heartland for about a year. Much of the behind-the-wheel practice takes place in the parking lot at Midwest Food Bank in North Normal, where cones are set up so drivers can practice backing up the tractor trailer and even parallel parking. You're going to run over Devin, one student says as another backs up the truck. They quickly tell a reporter not to worry, they aren't running over human beings. We named the cones, said Headley. We have to do something to keep us entertained when you're backing up for 4 hours. Heartland recently formed a partnership with Cisco Central Illinois, based in Logan County, under which eligible participants who complete Heartland's CDL program and pass the state's CDL exam can be selected for a 12-week apprenticeship program. Grief's advice to anyone considering taking the class and becoming a truck driver is, don't wait, just do it. Our next story has a title, City Fees for Trash Sewer Go Up May 1st. The byline is Maria Nagel. Bloomington residents can expect to see their monthly city utility bills go up May 1st to reflect automatic annual increases for garbage, sanitary sewer, and stormwater services. Fee increases initially enacted in 2018 are being followed by 3% annual increases each May 1st. Increases are part of a fee schedule that are needed to address funding shortfalls with infrastructure, City Manager Tim Gleason said Thursday. The 35-gallon garbage cart rate will increase from $16 to $16.48, the 65-gallon cart from $25 to $25.75, and the 95-gallon cart from $29 to $29.87. The garbage fee for low-income residents qualified under federal poverty guidelines will increase from $16 to $16.48 monthly. The monthly combined sanitary sewer and stormwater rates for a typical residential household are projected to increase from $19.91 for the current fiscal year to $20.51 on May 1st. The monthly combined sewer stormwater fee increased on May 1st of 2018 by $6.06 for the typical residential household. That fee also was set to increase by 3% each year thereafter to help pay for needed sewer replacements over the next 20 years. Also last May, the City Council raised the fees for its two largest garbage carts and cut bulk waste pickups at the curb to twice a year to close a $1.1 million annual deficit in the solid waste disposal program. The council also added 3% annual increases beginning this May 1st for all cart sizes and the low-income refuse fee. Also, $1.05 will automatically be added to utility bills if residents do not opt out of leak protection for residential water and sewer service. Coverage, which will pay for higher bills caused by increased volume resulting from leaks, is limited to one leak event per resident per year and is capped at $500 per occurrence. That's an opt-out program, so that's initially going to go on everyone's bill May 1st, said City Finance Director Scott Rathbun. Customers who did not want the service and were unaware that they needed to opt out will be reimbursed for any premiums they paid during the first 12 months of the program, said City Public Works Director Jim Karch. Those who keep leak protection also will be eligible to sign up for Sunbelt Insurance Group's ServLine Protection Program to cover repairs for portions of water and sewer lines that are the responsibility of homeowners. City code holds homeowners responsible for maintaining lines running from their homes up to the city's main lines, said Karch. The monthly residential rates are $4.84 for water line repair and $6.60 for sewer line repair insurance for a maximum coverage of $10,000 per occurrence and no cap on the number of occurrences. Other insurance companies also provide similar protection plans. The monthly fire protection rate for businesses that have fire suppression systems supplied by City Water will go up May 1st, said Rathbun. Rate increases were scheduled for 2010, 2011, and 2012, but they were never billed. The older fee increases are being phased in over 3 years, $13.60 per inch effective May 1st, $20.40 per inch effective May 1st, 2020, and $27.20 per inch as of May 1st, 2021. To generate $225,000, the council last year also increased fees for community development, building safety, and code enforcement and other services. The changes, which began May 1st, 2018, called for increasing those fees by 5% every other year, so they will not be increased this year, said Rathbun. Now let's look back in time a bit in the section entitled How Time Flies. 100 years ago, on April 12, 1919, engineers and trainmen on the Chicago and Alton will be getting a raise, the U.S. Railroad Administration announced. The adjustments will be retroactive to January 1st and will put the railroad workers in four unions ahead of what they were earning in 1917. 75 years ago, April 12, 1944, heavy rains and lightning caused lowland flooding and damage in Logan County. The picture is also rainy in Woodford County, where farmers haven't been able to get into their fields for 2 weeks. Only 10% of the oat crop is reported planted. 50 years ago, April 12, 1969, the Fairbury Cropsey School Board passed a new salary schedule. The top of the range is $11,895 for teachers with a master's degree plus 32 credit hours, along with 17 years of experience. Entry-level teachers with a bachelor's degree will make $6,500. And 25 years ago, on April 12, 1994, Donald Whitwood, age 18, was sentenced to jail time, probation, and ordered to make partial payback to Unit 5 for the $35,000 damage he did to the Normal West construction site. Full restitution was unrealistic because Whitwood couldn't earn that much, the judge said. Next, we have an article entitled Epiphany Farms Moving to Downs. The byline is Kevin Barlow. For Kevin Miska, planting the seeds on the Epiphany Farm site on Bloomington's southern edge was bittersweet. Miska, the owner and director of operations for the Epiphany Farms Hospitality Group, is hoping the seeds he planted in the spring will be harvested by new residents in the fall. Miska said Epiphany Farms has outgrown the 10 acres there and will be moving all operations to Epiphany Estate, about 4 miles east of Downs. This is a great place, and we are sad to leave here because I have had 3 kids grow up in that house, but our business has grown and we need more room, he said. After working in some of the finest restaurants in the country, including Solo in New York, Company American Bistro in Las Vegas, and Broadmoor Resort in Colorado Springs, Miska returned to Bloomington Normal, where he grew up, in 2009. Since then, he and his family have opened Epiphany Farms Restaurant at 220 East Front Street in Bloomington, Anjou Above on the second floor of the same building, the Old Bank Restaurant and Bar at 201 East Center Street in Leroy, and Bakery and Pickle at 513 North Main in Bloomington. We are building a new facility, and we are kind of mimicking the farm that we had at the old complex, but building to suit our needs near Downs, he said. We will have a state-of-the-art pack house, a frozen structure, root cellar, an all-year-round greenhouse, and additional parking. The Kickapoo Creek property he is selling lists for $395,000 on Zillow.com and includes orchards, greenhouses, a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom house, and 2 barns. It will also come with a contract for 2 years where I will be willing to buy the fruit and vegetables, so there would be a good contract for a purchase of the goods, he said. I would also do mentoring and management services if they needed help. It still is our original nursery, and there are over 500 different species of fruits and vegetables that are growing there. Miska added it would be a perfect homestead for a young family, a small business, a nonprofit organization, or a beginning farmer. Epiphany Farms Hospitality Group began in 2009, selling produce at farmers markets, and now is a full-fledged hospitality group with 100 acres of farmland in McLean County. The goal is to provide a culture of healthy, sustainable, and regenerative food sourcing and use as much local product as possible. Currently, Epiphany Farms employs about 180 people, but another 70 could be added by the fall. Another business story is entitled Midwest Fiber Starts $3 Million Recycling Plant Upgrades. The byline is Derek Bai. Midwest Fiber hopes $3 million in upgrades over 3 weeks will boost both business at its Twin City facility and local recycling rates. The Normal-based company will idle its 422 South White Oak Road facility, continuing to take in recyclable products but not immediately processing them, into early May to install equipment that will improve its capacity by as much as 33%, said Director of Sales and Procurement Todd Shoemaker. This gives us capacity to add more jobs as we process more material in the future, he said. We want to keep working with the local communities to try to improve their recycling programs and maybe reach out to nearby communities to process their recyclables. The Normal facility takes in recyclables, including aluminum, cardboard, glass, paper, and plastic, from communities within a 50-mile radius, sorts them, and removes trash and other materials that don't belong. The current processing rate of about 13 tons of material per hour could grow to more than 20 tons per hour with the new equipment. Some of that is done by hand by the facility's about 100 employees, but much of it is mechanical, and new mechanical pieces will help improve the process. One of the main components is called an optical sorter, which will help identify materials that our primary sorting hasn't gotten out, said Shoemaker. Maybe a plastic water bottle flattened so much it resembles paper, and it's contaminated with newspaper. The optical sorter will identify it as plastic, and we can remove it and have a better product. Midwest Fiber then sells that product to companies that reuse the raw materials, a tougher sell since China imposed strict regulations on importing recyclable materials from many countries, including the United States. Some of it is changing requirements on the paper. Buyers want a quality product, so this equipment helps with that, Shoemaker said of the upgrades. But we're also doing this expansion with a long-term vision. As Midwest Fiber takes on more recyclable materials, that means less ends up in landfills as well, a stated goal of local governments led by the Normal-based Ecology Action Center after last year's closure of the McLean County landfill, which means local garbage is now transported to Pontiac. Midwest Fiber's expansion will not only benefit recycling, it is a clear sign of confidence in our systems despite some of the anxiety that is occurring elsewhere around recycling, said EAC Executive Director Michael Brown. The center also is in the middle of a public education campaign on recycling contamination that's expected to ramp up this spring and summer. Officials are targeting wish cycling, well-meaning residents putting trash in with their recycling, thinking the material is or could be recyclable. Now we'll turn to an update from the Zimmerman trial. The headline is Detective: Physical Evidence Did Not Match Ex-Husband. The byline is Edith Brady Lunny. Jurors in the Kirk Zimmerman murder trial viewed graphic photos Thursday of the crime scene where his ex-wife was found in November 2014. In the photos, Pam Zimmerman's body is seen on the floor behind the reception desk of her office at 2103 East Washington Street in Bloomington. Her body is in a fetal position, her head lying in a pool of blood. Kirk Zimmerman, age 60, is accused of shooting his ex-wife 4 times. More than 100 crime scene photos were reviewed, including images of Pam Zimmerman's office and a 9mm shell casing found on a windowsill near her body, which was found by a close friend and a staff member on November 4, 2014. A cord to a landline telephone on the reception desk was cut, according to testimony Thursday from Bloomington Police Detective Scott Mathewson. In testimony on Wednesday, another BPD detective, Sergeant Tim Power, acknowledged Kirk Zimmerman was a priority among 3 men for investigators' attention in the hours after the victim was found. Officers later talked with Eldon Whitlow, the victim's final client at her financial services office, and Scott Baldwin, her fiancé. Mathewson was questioned Thursday by defense lawyer John Rogers about possible contamination of evidence by the large number of first responders and police who were summoned to the office building after Pam Zimmerman, age 53, was found. The detective detailed the items submitted to the state crime lab for testing. Asked about the results, he said, "There was no physical evidence that I recovered that matched Kirk Zimmerman." The state introduced a large number of exhibits from the crime scene, including Pam Zimmerman's purse found in her office and her wallet and cell phone located several blocks from the building. Rogers became annoyed after Thursday's final witness said she could not recall if she had seen Kirk Zimmerman in the Eastside office complex the day of the murder. Judith Stroh is employed at iCare Associates, located in the lower level of the building. She said she knew the Zimmerman family as customers and Pam as a tenant in the office complex. Rogers asked Stroh if she was now trying to help the state convict Mr. Zimmerman of murder. "To be perfectly honest, I don't remember any of the questions I was asked. That was so long ago," Stroh testified. When she was shown a copy of the police reports of her interview, Stroh acknowledged she did not mention seeing Zimmerman in the building in November 2014. The trial resumes on Monday with more of the state's witnesses. Next, we'll turn to some letters to the editor. The first is titled, "Connect Transit Changes Hurt." This is about the unfairness of Connect Transit and the city councils. These fare increases are going to hurt more people than help. Being a disabled rider in Bloomington on a fixed income is hard. The changes are going to force people to make a choice. Do I take my kids to daycare or go to church? Do I go to work or go for groceries? Do I pay home renter's insurance or my health insurance? How do I tell my kids, oh, you can't go to that sport camp this summer, but your daughter can go to that cheerleading camp? It's like our federal government is taxing more middle class than upper class. Connect Transit is punishing the people who use it the most. I feel that getting rid of the 30-day mobility pass is completely wrong. In my opinion, they should keep it and offer set rates outside the mobility route area and give them the same discount fares as they offer on the value card. It would work just the same. Last thing, olive route changes. It's going to be very difficult for the mother of three toddlers to get to the bus stop if it goes away. Elderly and disabled can't make it so they can get to work, doctors, family, etc. Again, I think Connect Transit isn't thinking of the people of Bloomington Normal. Signed, Robert Ballantini of Bloomington. The next letter is also about Connect Transit. It's titled, "Review Changes for Connect Transit." Transportation for those of us who use Connect Mobility, the little buses, is at risk. Many Bloomington Normal residents have no idea of the cost for those who have a need to use this form of transportation. Some must pay $8 for a round trip to the grocery store, etc. Others must pay $6. These charges are forced on taxpayers based on how far they live from a fixed bus stop. Others who live within the fixed bus stop route now pay $4 per round trip. The board has voted to raise these fares 50 cents per trip. Also, the board has voted to stop the 30-day transit pass that costs $65 and use what they call value cards that will give a small discount per card. These cards will cost up to $200, have limited rides, and will cause a burden to those who use the services for work, taking children to daycare, and returning. We, Citizens to Ensure Fair Transit, CEFT, have attended board meeting after meeting and continue to attend hearings to let our voices be heard. The board hears, but they are not listening. Recently, citizens attended hearings throughout the Twin Cities, expressed concerns regarding the changes and the perceived problems. It has been suggested that after making the 50-cent increase, that all riders using the service pay the $5 per round trip and that the 30-day pass be continued. Signed, Marguerite Brooks of Bloomington. Our next letter is entitled, "Much We Can Do for Government Efficiency." This is a letter I have considered writing for some time. Given how concerned many people claim to be over the cost of government, these suggestions are offered. Please note this is only some of the low-hanging fruit. Merge the Bloomington and Normal libraries. Create a new central library at the old Mennonite Hospital site and use the current Normal Library as a branch. Better yet, use one of the Eastland Mall buildings for the new library, the Normal Library as a branch, and establish a branch on the west side of Bloomington. Please get rid of City of Bloomington Township and Normal Township. Merge their functions into the cities. Neither provide a service that cannot easily be handled by the cities or perhaps the county. The most simple efficiency that can be enacted, of course, is abolishing the Bloomington Election Commission and merging those duties into the county clerk's office. Such red herring issues as partisan politics by the county clerk or the clerk's office trying to suppress the ISU student vote are simply silly. Creating a separate election commission is nothing more than creating another unneeded bureaucracy. After nearly 50 years of working on local government issues, it is my opinion there is much we can do to make the provision of government services to our community more efficient and affordable. I am, however, not hopeful we will do any of it. Signed, Paul Harmon of Normal. In our last letter, asylum seekers are brothers and sisters. Our president says our country is full. Our president says our neighbors to the south of us are bad people. After spending almost 4 months in the southwest part of our country, I emphatically disagree. My husband and I have had the opportunity to work at church-sponsored shelters that feed, clothe, and give rest to many refugees who are seeking asylum in our country. They are mostly young families who are fleeing for their lives. Some have told us their stories of the gangs who have taken over their villages with such gun power that the local officials abandoned them. They arrive at the shelters very dehydrated and fearful of being separated from each other. We will never forget the images of putting grapes in the outstretched hands of the children, giving soup and tortillas to their exhausted parents, and even the power of a smile to show our fellow human beings that they are loved and safe. These are not people to be feared or put in cages. They are our brothers and sisters. They are coming to America because we are the land of diversity and opportunity. This letter is signed by Julie Knutson of Bloomington. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Bloomington Pantograph, dated Friday, April 12th. Please stay tuned.